One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So once again, it's Joe Peters with Dr. Jim Hughes. Jim, why don't you give us in 60 seconds or so a little about your background?
It reminds me of an old story. Brendan Byrne once told me. He was asked one time, why don't you give your qualifications and the like and take 2 minutes? And the person, and he said to him, how can I do that in 2 minutes? And he was responded, speak very slowly. Oh, but the last 3 years, I've been very fortunate. The Board of Governors named me as a university professor, which is a nice, innocuous-sounding position, but it's one of the highest-rated faculty positions at the university. I only report to the chief academic officer of the university. Wow. I work out my schedule with her. I'm free to teach in any unit I want. I'm free to do research and contract work with any unit at the university, okay. But it's my choice. So I'm not tied down to a specific unit, and I don't have to report to a dean. And since I was a dean for 23 years, it's nice not to have to report to a dean. I've been on the Rutgers faculty a long time, really started off as a very junior member in 1971, so I'm going to hit my 50th anniversary. Wow. 2 years from now. And I spent most of the time specializing in demographics, housing, economic development, and then there was a void in terms of very few people focusing on New Jersey. So after I had established my broad academic reputation, I started focusing very closely on New York, New Jersey, the region, what's been happening in terms of the economy, how do we compare to the nation, how are demographics changing, how are they impacting housing markets, how are the changing demographics impacting the economy and the like. So I've had the freedom to do that. I'm enjoying it very much, and I plan to keep on doing it.
So what percentage of your time is research now versus teaching?
It's probably about, well, you really have three components, teaching, research, and service.
Okay.
And the general guideline is one-third each.
Okay.
And I probably shift a little bit less on teaching than the one-third. I do mm-hmm. two courses a year. But I put more time into external speaking and service and the like, trying to link what the university does to the population at large, to various organizations, and essentially what's happening in the economy, what's happening in demographics, providing really the context that a lot of individual businesses and activities work in and the like. And then research is the other third. Within there. But I'm not fixed to that. If there's a big research project that comes on stream and I join it, then I'm going to put more time into that.
I think you've earned your stripes, so they give you a little bit of rain. Jim, I first started listening to you somewhere around 2014, 2015, as you addressed the Hunterdon and Somerset counties as far as business outlook. And I think for the sake of today's conversation, I'd like to leave the last 2 weeks of history out of the conversation, and we'll just touch on it at the end, because it skews everything else when you start to, and I think people are sick of hearing about it anyway. And why they're buying so much toilet paper is beyond, but whatever. So when I first heard you talked about the receding metropolitan perimeter, and that paper was published in 2014, and it talked about how people were just pulling back towards the New York City area and not coming as far out as Hunterdon County anymore. And I, in my understanding, moved my business further east to meet where they were moving, and I changed my direction to cover Hunterdon in the western part of Somerset County to Hunterdon and all across Somerset County. And it's worked in my behalf. But an interesting thing happened last year. I was selling a house just north of Bedminster on Ski Hill, which is an old ski resort up there. And one of the agents who was the listing agent, I told him how people used to come to about Route 31 and a mile, and that's as far as they wanted to go. It was Clinton Township, Reddington, Raritan. We sell 60% of all our houses today in that area, but that's as far as they wanted to go. I said, but what I witnessed is it's pulled back to be sort of like 287 plus a mile, which is Bridgewater. And he says, no, it's nowhere near here. It's about another 10 miles to the east. So it all depends on your perspective. The people, even in Somerset County, have seen that receding perimeter. So I don't think it's stopped. But at the same time, if I listen to Mark Salek across the hall, he tells me they're moving back. Or at least the millennials are starting to come in. What I witness more is people between their first and second child, and we're not having three and four children anymore in any great extent. But they're not the people that left. They're the people that discovered Hunterdon County, as Marilyn and I did after our kids were grown and gone. So what is your thought? I mean, has the perimeter moved a little?
We're still seeing a shrinking perimeter, but not as bad as it was in the immediate post-recession years.
Okay.
There, then it was pretty heavy. But it was a stark change from really the 1950 to 2010 period. You know, we had six decades of moving farther and farther outward, more toward the suburban perimeter. And so it was kind of shocking to see that come to an end, and then all of a sudden the center of the region, New York City, Hudson County, and the like, which have been hemorrhaging population in the 60s, 70s, and 80s,
right,
they started stabilizing and growing. So it was a completely new trend. What we've seen on the national level, and my demographer colleagues from across the country have almost reached a consensus on this, some of that movement inward was really a reaction to the Great Recession, and it was an aftershock of the Great Recession. But the last two or three years nationally, that return to the city movement has tended to taper off. And we've seen it in this region, too. The last 2 years, New York City has actually lost population, and I've experienced out-migration like New Jersey has. So it is a slightly different world, but it's not the immediate post-recession period when we thought there was permanent radical change.
Right.
And some of it was simply, and for Hunterdon, was not really population shrinking in terms of population losses. It was like a four-person household becoming a two-person household.
Right.
And that the two college-age children said, thanks, Mom. Thanks, Pop. You raised us in this beautiful environment, this safe environment, but we're out of here. We're going to Jersey City.
Right.
We're going to Hoboken and the like. And that those millennials have emptied out. So that's kind of stopped to a degree. And you do have both some people returning because they're in the family-raising stage of the life cycle. But then we're going back maybe 50, 60 years ago. We're being rediscovered, perhaps, by people from Brooklyn and
right.
some of the real dense areas of New York. And they see, wow, this is really rural out here. This
right.
is low density and the like. It's not a huge market sector, but there are people falling in that category.
I see that even, as I said earlier off the station, that the Warren Watchung area, the people from Brooklyn are selling because the people from New York City tend to move east, not west. And the people in Brooklyn have sold their million-dollar brownstone for $2 million, and they take their equity and come out to Somerset County, which is the really first nice place, as Mike Kerwin likes to say, and think they're in heaven. And not too many of them want to go much further because you have a much more diverse mix of ethnicity in Somerset County than you do in Hunterdon County. And I can remember up on a ridge in a couple of years ago talking to a guy, and I could see what he was looking for, and I said, if you get in a car and drive 5 miles and get off at exit 24 at Tewksbury, I can help you find that in that price range. He says, no, my temples are here. He was Sikh. He said, my temples are here. The kids are integrated. I won't leave this environment to go there for that. And I don't know if he was representative, but he made perfect sense to me that day.
And yeah. No, it does. I mean, there are many, many households that want to raise their children in a diverse environment. They want them to go to a school that has diversity because they realize that's the way the world is.
Right.
So they want their children to have that experience. So certainly, and Somerset County is the proportion of foreign-born is slightly above that of the state, which is 22-23%.
Right.
So Somerset is really very, very diverse, and it has been for a long time.
I said on Mike Kerwin's, Mike was until, I guess, to the end of this month, the president of the chamber. He's retiring, and Chris is taking his job. But I sat on his diversity council with a lot of the people from various large companies, including Mike McDonough from RBCC. And it was interesting what we discovered, because we discovered there was more diversity than we thought. And we discovered it was very sought after by companies moving into Somerset County, because it's a proven statistic at this point in time, but most people don't realize it. If we hadn't immigrated to Somerset County, and to some extent Hunterdon County a little bit, we would have a net minus in millennials, that the millennials have got up and moved towards New York City, and the people that replace them in the pharma jobs specifically are coming into the country for those jobs that they've abandoned or not taken. Is that your feeling as well?
Yeah, generally. And I think if we're looking at Hunterdon per se, For a market segment that are looking really for quality of environment, it's a much better place than it was 20 years ago, because you have a much greater proportion of the land that's been put in farmland preservation, in open space, and the like. And there's less of a chance of seeing rampant suburbanization change the character of the county.
Right.
And so if you purchase here, if you really want to have a long stay here and not see a deterioration of the environment, this is the place to be now. And there's a lot of people here committed to that. So that's its sort of core competence,
right.
I think. It's also, again, it's also a bedroom community for the Somerset County jobs.
Right, and this is something I tell people, and they look at me like I'm nuts, and I'm saying, look, everybody goes east, okay? Hunterdon County is a $20 an hour environment, work-wise, okay? There's a few jobs above that, but I have a guy who runs an employment agency, and the highest he's ever placed in 5 years in Hunterdon County has been $22 an hour. So it's a $40,000 environment. If you want to make more than that, you're going to go east, and you're probably going to go past Somerset County into Morristown or even over to the close to New York. Why people are going to New York. But when you get up and leave, people are getting up at Easton and coming this way because we pay $2 an hour more, plus we have the jobs. So the whole world is going to the east in the morning. We call it traffic, okay? And that's the way the world has always worked. When I first got into IT, I was an IT guy in retail. I was in South Amboy, Cicerville section. I used to catch the train out of South Amboy because they changed engines there at that point in time. It was a great place to do it, and went to New York. So for 23 years, I went to New York City till we moved to Secaucus one day. And I'm saying, why was I ever in New York City? I'm making the same amount of money. I don't have to go in anymore. The hardest thing I had was not to check the train schedule. My car was downstairs. It was a different way of life. But we're coming out of an economic cycle. According to the map that you had shown, it looks like we're about ready to peak. And you also said that at 125 months, not counting the last 2 weeks, we've had the longest run ever, and it can't last forever. Could you talk a little about what will precipitate that change? And I'm sure you don't have a crystal ball. But
yeah. Well, if we discount the last, 2 weeks where there have been two shocks, the coronavirus and now the energy wars between Saudi Arabia and Russia,
right?
And the like, those are always could be precipitating elements, an external shock, which throws the system out of whack and puts us potentially into recession. But the normal case is within the national economy, ignoring the external factors. It's either inflation builds up, and then the Federal Reserve usually murders the expansion by raising interest rates to counteract.
Right.
And the famous case was Paul Volcker after the 81-82 debacle, recession and the like. Interest rates were 20%, but he kicked out inflation, which was a huge problem in that specific era. But I don't think we have any internal excesses. Like the last two recessions we had that impacted Somerset Hunterdon was the telecommunications bubble in the late 1990s. Route 78 was known as the telecommunications corridor for all the telcos in there, and that whole capital investment bubble that we had. And then we had the credit bubble of the 2000s, which precipitated, the 2007 recession and the like. So we had those two events because we had really bubbles in the system, and the old adage is you never know you're in a bubble economy till it bursts. I don't think we're in a bubble economy. So age is, I always point out, Australia hasn't had a recession since 1991.
Wow.
So that's now 29 years
okay.
ago. So it is possible to, if you have a disciplined expansion, for it to keep going. And this one looked like it, and it still may keep going, despite the events of the last 2 weeks. Well, we're certainly going to have a slowdown.
Right.
But the other factors, the job report for February nationally was extraordinarily positive. Which really blew a lot of people away. It was almost 250,000 jobs created nationally.
Plus about 80,000 correction from the month before.
Yeah, so things were going good. And the other force that may be evident in terms of a recession is that companies have had a hard time building up their labor forces and workforces.
Right.
They're not going to quickly jettison those people, even in an economic slowdown, because they realize it's taken them a couple of years to really build that up. That's quite different from the 2007-2009 Great Recession, when the national economy knocked out about 8.7 million jobs in under 2 years. I mean, everybody was just shedding employees and downsizing and the like. They're not going to do that because they're going to have a hard time replacing them again, or somebody else will hire them. So that's a potential positive force. But it's only the events, I think, of the last 2 weeks which are really going to put it potentially in jeopardy. But you can always get so focused on what's happening. You can't predict for the next 2 years on what happened the last 2 weeks.
Right. And I belong to a Wednesday morning group that meets in Warren, and it's a high net worth group, and these guys are all in restructuring business, and I feel gifted to sit at the table with the 20 of them. And the one guy said he went to a purchase order managers meeting in San Diego, and he said, I attended the same meeting last year in San Diego, and the theme was we can't find qualified workers. He got back 60 days ago from this year's meeting, and the theme is we can't find workers. They don't need to be qualified, and we're out of people. I mean, when I hear, and I sat and listened to somebody, I guess it was Bernie last night, saying we got to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, I said, Bernie, you need to come to Hunter County. We're at $15 an hour. The economy works if you let it work. But we may be atypical because we have so few people here, we're having to pay people more and more. And that's the three commodities I've always been told, time, people, and money. And you can't change time, so all you can do is pay people more money. And that's where we've gotten to. We're out of people. We can only steal people from other people. And in order to do that, you've got to pay them more money.
It's pretty widespread. It's not, you know, we're not unique. I mean, there are places in the Midwest and the like, you know, the old manufacturing zones where they're still in real trouble. But throughout the Northeast region, you know, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, we all have unemployment rates at or below the national level, which is really indicating labor shortages.
And in New Jersey, sitting at 3.5, along with the national, it was 3.6 the month before. If you look at Hunterdon and Somerset, I think Hunterdon is more at 2.5 and Somerset's about 2.9. So our counties are even better. But it's because we don't have as many people living here as we used to, I think, and we're not filling it in from the bottom up. We're not having children the way we used to. I mean, I was looking at your chart that said 2010 and 2020 was the slowest U.S. population growth rate. And this is U.S.
Yeah.
But we've suffered the same thing. When I visited the high school north, and he also oversaw the one north of him, I'm trying to think what it's called, Voorhees, he said, we're going to lose 24% of our population in high school over the next 4 years. And it's because we can see it in K through 8. They're not coming at us. And people aren't moving here. And Somerset County sort of offset it. I'm on a board of realtors for Hunterdon, Somerset, and Mercer. And Somerset County has, she was the mayor last year, Gloria, but she's not this year. But she said, we built all of those apartments between Somerville and Hillsborough. The schools are filled again. Well, that hasn't happened here in Hunterdon County. And the schools aren't full again. As a matter of fact, one of our local parochial schools is having a trouble, from what I understand, staying open. And when the church runs out of money, you're really out of money. So I'm not being sacrilegious. It just we're not having the children that we used to have.
Yeah, the measure that demographers use is called the total fertility rate, and it's sort of a synthetic measure, but it indicates how many children a woman would have during her lifetime based on this year's birth rates. The peak of the baby boom in 1957, the typical woman would have 3.8 children. Replacement level fertility is 2.1. So if every woman had 2.1 children, it would produce two adults who would be reproducing, and you'd have a flat population. We're now down to 1.7, and it's the lowest fertility rate in the history of the country. So we're just not reproducing ourselves anymore. At the same time, we have the huge baby boom generation born 46 to 64 and pre-baby boomers. We have a bigger population that we're losing.
Right.
So we have more deaths, fewer births. We don't have that net natural increase. So we're really dependent on migration now for population growth.
And I think it wasn't 2020, it must have been 2019, Hunterdon for the first time ever had less births than deaths. And that is scary. And the people that are moving here for quality of life, but there's not as many as used to be moving here. But the thing that I find gratifying is that we're fully employed, 2.5% unemployment. I figure 3% is typical if you ever took Economics 101. And we're filling up not only all the houses. We aren't building houses in Hunterdon County, another whole problem. But we are building them in Somerset County, and everything under 500 sells the day before it comes on. It never even makes it to the market. The agent sells it to somebody they've got in their pocket when they go to list it. So the only increase in inventory we've got is the 400 to 600 segment, which is the move-up segment, and they're probably selling to the under 400, and Somerset it might be the under 500. And the point I wanted to come back to, that's probably a good point to make it, is that what we are building is affordable housing, and it's crippling us. It's a decision made 10, 12 years ago, and being now implemented by a council that's gone and the political judges that are in place today. And I've sat in these chairs, talked to Hunterdon, Reddington, Raritan, Clinton Township, and Bethlehem in the last 3 months, and every one of them is doing what they have to do to fulfill the affordable housing. But not one of them is thinking much past 2025, because nobody even knows what we're going to do after that, which is the end of this wave of affordable housing. And John Higgins and Janice Kovac sat here and said, we're going to put 800 people in 1 square mile over the next 7 years if we fulfill our obligations. That means 1.7 cars, 800 people, no traffic impact studies, the biggest traffic jam we're ever going to see if it really comes to fruition. The question is, will we fill them up? But if we do, it will change the complexion of the county.
Yeah, that's it. The whole, from my perspective, the whole affordable housing model was really based on the massive suburbanization of the last century. That is, Merck was moving out to White House Station, and it had 1,900 employees. So those Hunterdon should provide the workforce housing for those people. But the world has changed. Merck, you know, there's a few people in there now.
Under 200 a year.
And all those outer suburban offices are knocked down or vacant. So the inner suburban office locations are the ones where those jobs are now. And really, economic opportunity, you know, for the workforce is closer in. It's not out here. We were the frontier 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
Now we're not the frontier anymore. So it's sort of like generals fighting the last war rather than the current war or the war that we're going to see in the future. And, yeah, some of that housing is just you have to consider in affordable housing the transportation cost.
Right.
And so if you put – sure, you can build more affordable housing away from developed areas because land is cheaper or not, but you're saddling somebody with a long commute and a costly commute. Right. Right now, gasoline is cheap, but it's not always going to be cheap, and we've seen how that has fluctuated before. But the other thing that may bode well for the suburban ring, maybe more for Somerset than Hunterdon, is that there are growing imbalances within areas like Brooklyn and Manhattan and access to New York City. The infrastructure is aging. There are people may get urban fatigue. For a while, I'll live in a smaller housing unit so I can walk to restaurants and have nightlife and the like. But after a while, that may get old.
That 800 square foot thing you talked about at the last meeting. People get tired of the red boxes.
Yeah. So there could be a push factor out of those areas that have been hot. And then also, Gen Z, who are the oldest ones, are now 23. It's the generation following millennials. They can't follow millennials, you know, maybe into the waterfront or into Brooklyn. When the millennials did that 20 years ago, it was much cheaper. Those were frontier areas. Now the prices have been bid up enormously. So they almost have a wall in front of them where they can't get in. They can't afford it. So they may not flock.
Interesting.
As the millennials did. So they're going to settle for something else. And so maybe they'll be in the inner ring suburbs and we'll see a successive waves outward again as we did 50 years ago.
Well, the other thing I've noticed, and I listened to Jeff Otto, and I'm sure you know Jeff, and he's saying 65% of all of our new construction over the last 2 years in New Jersey has been rental-only construction. And it's meant to fulfill the void left by people not being able to find houses, but do still want to live here because the work is here. But it slowed down last year. I think we've reached our climax on rental, but it's changed the way we're living because the people living in those near to New York, Bayonne's and Jersey City, are paying twice as much. They're probably paying 40 to 50% of their gross income to live there, where it should be more like 25 to 30% of their income. And as a result, they're not accumulating any great mass of money where they could buy a house when it's time to buy a house. Everything could, just to get a shirt clean costs twice as much. You got to park the car. The coffee's $8. The people coming back are coming back for quality of life, but they're not coming back. They're coming here for quality of life. The people that left aren't necessarily coming back, and even the parents are moving out, going south and west. I think more people going to Pennsylvania than anything else. But you talked about inflation hitting its lowest in the last 50 years in the 2010s. How does that impact where we're at?
It's probably a lot of dimensions to that. First of all, you have a generation like millennials or their younger cohorts, Gen Z, who are teenagers now. They've never experienced inflation.
Right.
And that's a force in itself. It's the evidence is in Japan, where they haven't had inflation for 25, 30 years. So the least little bit of price increase, they stop buying.
Okay.
Because they feel something's wrong. It should be stable. I'm not going to pay more for that.
Interesting.
So that's changing consumer behavior.
Right.
And the like. One of the incentives for home ownership was, to counter inflation, because your home is going to increase with inflation, and you're leveraging it. You're only putting 10% down, so that 10% is the base for your what your rate of return is, and the like. So that's maybe changed the housing motivation somewhat, and we don't know the full consequences of that. If we look at Japan, it's not positive. It's this sort of long-term stagnation.
They're more multi-generational ownership. The family owns the house, not the generational family owns the house, not that generation.
And it may inhibit, you got to get into the home ownership cycle, get into the inflation cycle, so you're not left behind. And when you add that to younger people who've seen their parents' home lose value,
right.
All of a sudden, it's not this super piggy bank that you're guaranteed to be a winner.
Yeah.
They realize you can lose in that game.
You can. I know we sold our mega mansion in 2009 and decided, let's rent for a year. It's 10 years later, I'm a real estate agent. I'm still renting. It's not such a bad lifestyle. I don't have to do anything outside. Two-thirds of what I'm paying the guy in mortgage and rental is going to his taxes and homeowners. So I'm really not spending all that much. Yeah, I'm not getting any appreciation. I'm not getting any, and there's not a lot of it left, tax deduction. But Marilyn said at best, she said, the last thing we need at this point in our life is another bad investment. So why buy another house? And we first realized that we have some timeshares in the Keys and you can buy timeshares in the Keys cheap as possible. But if you want to buy a place in the Keys, which you don't want to because the Keys get wiped out every 10 years, it's absurdly expensive because there's no real estate down there. And when we go to Vegas, we see all these vacant. Why do I have to own when I can rent and there's so many places available? Now, if I'm observing that, I'm the smartest guy in the world. I'm sure other people are observing that as well, and that may be why we've had the influx of all the new rentals coming in.
And it's not your father's garden apartment of the 60s and
right.
70s. These are finished machines for living. I mean, they're packed with amenities. They have community facilities. You can take your laptop and go down into the common area, have coffee, maybe talk to some other people. You're not tied into your little specific unit. But that's also the way students are coming out of college. They're living in suites in colleges. They use the student center for joint working projects and interacting with people. So it's much more social and community-oriented. And those new apartment units do move in that same system. So what they're replicating what they had in the learning environment and their earning environment.
Okay.
They're same type of lifestyle and the like, and they want that in their workplace, and they want it in their residence place and the like. And I saw some young people quoted in terms of they didn't care to have a big backyard because they'd rather take their kid to the park. And the kid likes the big open space in the park. Didn't like the little back 20 by 20 or 20 by 30 backyard and the like. So to say the least, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out going forward from here.
So inflation is holding. I didn't hear you say anything to the contrary. Home sales are also down in the 2010s. The last decade was the lowest decade of U.S. new home sales. Now, I think you meant brand new construction when you said new home sales.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Because we're not building anything brand new.
Well, part of that is the bubble, and that was the
right.
the 2000 to 2010 period, that huge overbuilding that we had.
Right.
So it's a counter, but it's also then due to the demographics and the Great Recession itself, in that all the first-time home buyers, which were millennials post-recession, couldn't afford to buy a home, so they were renting or living at home with their parents. So it translated into fewer new home sales.
Got it. So Marilyn had to go talk to her TIA CREF people, and they were in New Brunswick. And right next to their building is a new Avon, if I remember the name of it. And the guy said, I'm selling my house, I'm going to move in there while my new house is being built, and we're going to live there for 6 months. Why don't you go by and take a look? So we did. And we went into the lobby, and there was a kitchen. You could rent the kitchen in the lobby to have a party, communal, like you talked about. Where you went to get your mail, there was a leaderboard which told you the next train coming in from New York was coming in at this time, and the next one leaving was leaving at this time, and hit the button, Uber's 2 minutes away. And we said, this is where it's at. This is what they're thinking. They're more in a temporary lifestyle where we always considered we wanted to own the home. It's ours. And we said, could we live here? And we said, we could, but not in New Brunswick. We're just not downtown people. But if I could find luxury high-rise in Hunterdon County for rent, I'd go there in a heartbeat. And I think a lot of seniors are thinking the same thing. And as a result of us not having it, many of the seniors are moving into Pennsylvania. And they can still come back here and get their hair cut, see the doctor, get the groceries, and even die and get buried.
I think one of the suburban models that has been very successful is Avalon Bay. They built the luxury apartments with all the amenities you've been talking about. But they're 2-3-story structures.
Okay. This one was a 10 or 12 story in New Brunswick, but they had to build on what they had.
Yes.
Because my office is in Warren Watch, and we have a 55 plus over there that range anywhere from 3,000 to 6,000 square foot. It's a gated community. They run anywhere from 900 to 1,600,000. It's definitely for the 55 to 65s. In my mind, 3 levels of 55 pluses. 55 to 65 means the kids are still in college. I'm coming home and I need a place for them, and I'm still working. 65 to 75, I'm probably still working, very active lifestyle, but I'm starting to think about getting on one floor. And then the 75 and above are just the people who decided to retire in place, age in place kind of communities. We don't have, and we have a complex problem, we don't have enough of that are at the moderate price level in Hunterdon or even in Somerset County. And what we have is becoming harder and harder to sell because their next generation is half their size. So the people who are now moving into their 80s and maybe going to their retirement home trying to sell are finding, I know in this one development I talked about, the prices have dropped $100,000, $150,000 in the last year because there's not that many people willing to buy it. And the people coming in looking around saying, I don't want that. This is 1,000 square feet too much for me. I can afford it. I had a Supreme Court judge in there about a month ago, and he said, I can afford to live wherever I want, and I like the layout here, but I don't like the size of it. I don't want this much square footage. So I think we have a shortage of what the seniors need, and we also have a shortage of what the millennials need. And then the people, in, which are my target in the middle, are the 35 to 55-year-olds. They're moving up a little. They're moving sideways a little. It's usually a life change, more kids, less kids, divorce, death, that makes them do something. So if you think about it, you have a first-time buyer, you have a move-up buyer, you have a... You may move up several times. It used to be every 7 or 8 years, but now it's quite a lot longer than that. Then you have a 55-plus, and then into the eventual conveyor belt of death, I call it. It's, you call it the predeceased generation.
Predeceased stage of life.
I said, no, you realize we're in a predeceased generation. But it is what it is. Yeah.
And we're plus, the other new thing, I don't know if it's new, but a shift in purchasing attitudes and the like, for particularly for millennials, they may select the community. And that's what they're buying into, the school system, the walkable downtown,
the
whatever amenities and like. And they may trade up in place rather than, they're not going to move to a different community to get a better house. And they may not be able to find the better house, so they upgrade the house that they're living in. So it's almost your starter home eventually becomes your forever home, again, because of the sheer importance of community to them.
So the very same thing I described to the fellow who was on the ridge in Somerset County a couple of years ago is what the millennials are doing. They want that sense of community. He wanted it for ethnicity. They want it for their lifestyle. That's what they grew up in. And they're not. That's why they're not coming back this way, because we don't offer it.
Or so, they're suffering from suburban fatigue. They were raised in a very, very low-density environment, and then they've discovered this alternative to that, you know, a car-free, at times, environment.
Because I remember my son-in-law came home. He was in... I remember where he went to college in Pennsylvania, one of the better schools out there, Penn State, Bucknell. And he says, there's nothing to do here. And I said, yeah, that's why we're here. And he says, that's not why I want to be here. And it was amazing because he went on and wound, I remember him saying to me, when am I going to start thinking like you? I don't agree with anything you say. I'm saying, that's because you just came out of college, and time will change. Well, he's now still living in Hunterdon County, and he thinks like me, because, not that I was right, he was wrong. It's the way you get to think over time, I think, as you accumulate a little bit of comfort in life. But it's not what people want, and if we weren't here to anchor him down, I guarantee you he would either have been back at Piscataway where he grew up, or over in Jersey City or wherever, where people of his age have tended to migrate to. And they didn't have any children, so he wasn't anchored by need for children and things. And that's another problem we have, is that I don't know how we're going to support ourselves going forward, but it's like the sun's going to explode in 800 million years. I'm just not going to worry about that right now. We aren't on course to have enough children to support us as we grow old Social Security-wise. And that's what the problem is with Social Security, and people are having less and less children for a variety of reasons. We're really changing dramatically from the way we grew up. I had 5 kids. Not one of them had more than 2. Most of their kids are now, I've got a great, have 1. It's a total different way of life than we grew up in. And not that one's right and one's wrong. It's just different.
Yeah. You know, lifestyles have changed and changed dramatically.
So you're saying the New Jersey economy, it's not soaring, it's not good, it's not bad, it's like Goldilocks, it's just right. But you're saying there's a couple of bright spots. You're saying that the United States is growing at 18%, and New York State, minus New York City, is growing at 10%. We're growing at 11.2%. So even beating New York was 9% and Pennsylvania. So even... We're second, we're the best in the U.S., but at the same time, we have a slow emergence from the Great Recession. In my mind, that means the next recession could catch us. And we have increasing competitiveness. Talk about that second point.
Well, I think when we look at the longer sweep, we were really adjusting to the changing office markets early on in the decade. And so the loss of Merck filtered through the economy,
right,
because those were 1,900 high-paying jobs. And you know, that effect started to taper off as we got toward the middle of the decade. And then Hunterdon is still a high-income county. We're still a bedroom county. A lot of people commute out for their workplace. So the consumer has been spending. So I think that job growth is really consumer-related rather than a primary big corporate job located within the county.
Okay.
And again, we're still a small base. So when you have a small base, it's easy to get a high rate of growth compared to the state as a whole. But when we look at the entire decade, we have lagged. Gotten better recently, but there's no question, you know, we're not at the corporate frontier anymore. That's
right.
That's
gone. Obvious. Although if you go into Somerset, I'm in the Chatham Bureau over there as well. They have more because they're closer. People like Sanofi coming in and bringing 200 or 300 jobs this year. That's a major, and that's one of 10 they can mention, where we have Merck put 180 or 200 in and really hasn't added much, and they haven't moved here yet. Exxon added a couple of hundred people. That's helping. But from what I'm hearing, we're filling up the industrial parks down 22 and 78 very nicely. So the economy hasn't just increased for the private individual, it's also increased for the small business. And that should help the economy eventually, house-wise. Those people eventually are going to want to live here.
But yeah. The whole suburban office ecosystem is reinventing itself. Okay. We're getting rid of the worst stuff that shouldn't have been built. You remember, 80% of all the office space ever built in the history of New Jersey went up between 80 and 90. So it was a huge office building bubble at that point in time. And everybody became an office developer. So
right. We
built some stuff which really wasn't pretty good. Remember, anything built from 80 to 90 was built before a Pentium computer. It was built before the Internet. It was built before mobile information technology. And that inventory now is 30 to 40 years of age. So we're going through this process of winnowing out the worst stuff. We have developers going in and really upgrading some other well-placed inventory and the like. And so that process hasn't come to an end, but Somerset has been one of the beneficiaries of that, particularly in this, both the 78 and the 287 corridors.
It's just that they haven't come any further. They didn't need to. They found what they needed in Somerset, so they're still stopping short of 100. But when I questioned you, what do we need to put into to bring millennials back, you said lots of granite and stainless steel in affordable but free market housing. We really haven't built anything new here in the last 10 years other than some basic affordable housing. And it's a mark. I said if we're going to put 800 new units in Clinton Township, we need some $20 restaurants over there. There's a business opportunity if I ever saw it. I have to come down to Flemington to find a 2-for-20 deal. We just don't have any restaurants like that in Clinton. Talk about the generations a little bit, Jim. I mean, I'm the very end of the silent generation, and I'm still working full-time. So I'm an example of what the millennials are complaining about getting out of the way. And I don't see any end in sight. I mean, I enjoy what I'm doing while the economy is good. And Marilyn, who retired from Rutgers, is working at handing out cheesecake at Costco, and she's discovered Alice people, which she never knew existed because she drove to Rutgers in a home, and we were in an $800,000 development there, and she was in a PhD development at the other end, and she said, Joe, there's all these people that work 3 jobs and have no benefits. I said, yeah, they're all around us. And they're pumping your gas, they're bringing your groceries, and they exist. You never knew they were there. But the point I'm getting at is I think the generations keep changing. As you said, the generation after Gen X is, after the millennials, is already in the workforce by 5 years. So we've got five generations. Gen Alpha is like still an unknown, yeah. Is beyond that. You're saying that the Gen Zs can't afford what the Gen Ys have acclimated to because they've overbuilt it. So I guess we probably have more of an opportunity building towards the Gen Zs' needs, which we don't know what they are because they're still too young, than trying to get the Gen Xs back, or Gen Ys back.
Yeah, Gen Zs are just entering, they're just graduating from college, entering the labor force. And, you know, we haven't done the empirical research to determine what they want. But one of the other generational disruptions that's in there is the small size of Gen X. And that's what's having a negative impact on the trade-up market. Because Gen X this year is roughly 40 to 55 years of age.
Right.
And maybe off a year or two in that. And that's the era of trade-up buying. And they're much smaller in size than the baby boom generation. So the pool of buyers age-wise that would logically purchase the used shelter of baby boomers is not big enough to take care of all of those units. So other things being equal, that was predicted 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing in the 55-pluses. So where... The other thing I think that watching your slides that I got the most out of your presentation is that the wealth is between the baby boomers and the pre-boomers. That's the 55 to 73. And some people much older than 73 are still working. So some of the silent generation is in there as well. But we're saying 75% of all the equity in the nation rises in the 55 and up. It's always been that way. I remember listening to the Marlboro Man in New York talking about how to get dressed in the Annex, which was an evening meat market, and go learn something. And he was talking about executive dress, and he says, you got to get through your head. Three-quarters of all the money in the world. This was 20, 30 years ago. Three-quarters of all the money in the world are people 55 and older's hands. You have to dress and act responsibly to them, or they're never going to promote you. I've never forgot that. And it hasn't changed.
No, and that there's going to be an intergenerational transfer of wealth.
Massive.
And that's certainly going to help millennials and Gen Z going forward. So that's a possibility for certainly changing some of the housing market dynamics, right, as that proceeds. But it's going to be slow.
Right.
We like to joke... it's very important in terms of millennials to get GI financing. Good in-laws.
I love it. So the last thing, just to touch on it, because we touched on it at the beginning and said we'd leave it to the end. I listened to any first 15 minutes this month, and he talks twice a year. Jeff Otto talked about what the impact will be. It has to be of what's going on. And his main point is we're in a gateway community state. We bring goods in that go to New York and Philadelphia, and we absorb some of them ourselves. We have 300,000 dock workers. Those dock workers make good money between Elizabeth and Newark. It's got to affect us. And he said, we just don't know how much it's going to affect us and how long it's going to last. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, several. Again, this... The first stages of the coronavirus really impacted the supply chain. And one of the features of the past quarter of a century is this global interdependent supply chain. And the question is, you know, we're going to not have enough goods on the shelf eventually if this keeps up this, unless China's able to ratchet up production again. But is that a temporary thing, or is that going to cause a structural change? Will corporate America and public policy say, hey, we're too dependent on one country.
Right.
We've really got to diversify in the future, maybe produce more stuff in the U.S. So there's always a possibility that singular event could
positively affect,
generate a structural change in the economy. Then the second part of the impact is the demand side of the equation. And so people have the dollars, but they're not going to fly. So the airlines are hurt. Convention is canceled, so the hotels are hurt. Yeah. So we have all that demand side impact, which I don't care if you cut taxes and the like, you're not going to impact either those supply shortages.
Right.
Or if you're not going to travel or use hotels or you can't have big gatherings and the like. So we have to work through that.
Yep.
And nobody knows how that's going to end. I mean,
it's a clear assessment. It's a clear assessment. Well, let's root for the best. I appreciate your coming on. I know even my daughter, who doesn't know what supply chain means, now knows what it means because it's a lot of the stuff that goes into stuff. When I worked for SAP, we had finished goods, then we had processed goods, and processed goods were the stuff that goes into goods. They don't have a name. And she's selling something to do with telecom, and she says, we can't get the stuff out of China. I said, now you understand supply chain. Your supply chain is down. They should have an alternate to buy, and maybe the alternate's in China as well. But when I was in retail, everything was subbed through Hong Kong, and everything went out to manufacturers, and they always had a secondary and a tertiary backup just for this reason. But if they're all in the same country, you have the same problem. And I think that's what we're here. We never expected this to happen. And some people will say they saw it coming, but quite honestly, I think we got blindsided.
Yeah, and it's only been really 20 years. Yeah. You look at the scale of imports and exports from China, it's really 2003, 2004 where it took off.
Wow.
And so it was a tremendous transformation, and that caused a lot of the income inequality of losing those jobs that had been here.
Well, Jim, thanks again for coming on. I'll have to be back in the future, a year or so from now, and we'll talk about what's changed in between. And guys, thanks for tuning in, and you could replay this at your will. It'll be up on my Facebook site overnight.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump says his administration is working very closely with the cruise ship industry on the growing coronavirus threat.
They're taking very strong steps in terms of people going on and going off, but they're spending a lot of money and they're working very hard, and we're going to be helping that industry.
Meeting with health insurers at the White House, Vice President Pence insists the full resources of the federal government are being focused on the growing coronavirus crisis, including pushing out accurate test kits. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill discussing a stimulus package to help the U.S. economy through the coronavirus outbreak. Republican Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky says this should be a bipartisan issue.
He and the Speaker can pull this together so that we end up not playing partisan games at a time which seems to me to cry out for bipartisan, bicameral agreement.
This is USA Radio News.
Does your business spend $500 a month or more on gas and electric bills? Did you know by making a simple free phone call, you can save up to 25% on your bill every month? What could you do with a 25% savings on utility bills every month? Energy deregulation is now available in your state. Making one simple phone call will show you how we can lower your gas and electric bills instantly. With no change.